amazingly, it's kind of scary to think that you could be sleeping with the enemy almost. It seemed like they were so close.
Welcome to another episode of Tell Us More. And thank you for joining. Here are your co-hosts.
I'm Jonathan Diamond.
And I'm Kenan Priest.
We're pre-dental students, and we're passionate about sitting down to hear the stories that made people who they are.
This podcast started out as an idea to interview the older generation and preserve their voice and memories for their families.
We saw the wisdom that they gained from living through tough challenges, and we think that examples of grit and integrity deserve to be shared.
We also wanted to connect with dentists to learn about the decisions that guided them through their professional journey.
Hearing their experience is bound to open up opportunities for other pre-dental students like us.
We hope you enjoy joining us as we ask them to tell us more.
Welcome to this episode. Today we're talking with William Christensen, a World War II veteran. And I also have my wife, Michaela, today as our special guest, helping me talk with her grandpa and talking about his experiences that he had in the war.
Super awesome opportunity that we get to meet with William and talk about his experiences that he's had in World War II, but also just how he's been able to grow from those experiences. So he actually served on the Princeton in the Navy. So we're just going to learn a little bit about his stories and what he had. Grandpa, what is one hardship that you had to overcome while you were in the Navy in World War II?
Homesickness. I'd never been away from home. And only trips, you know, on a bus up to Utah. But I was quite homesick. Most of us were. We were pretty young.
So how did you feel that you were able to overcome your homesickness with you and your friends?
Get more involved in what you're supposed to be doing. You grow up in a hurry. You have to hold up your ends, so to speak. And you get busy like that. And the main time is in the evening with when your head's on the pillow. That's when you start thinking about home and high school, basketball, football, all kinds of sports. But then it seemed like you wake up in the morning and then you're right back in the middle of things, not knowing if you're going to make it through that day. Because even on an aircraft carrier, you know, you're a target. A big target. You learn, you grow very, very fast. You gain a lot of knowledge, and instead of being a young kid, supposedly, all of a sudden you become a man.
So how would you tell younger generations how they could overcome homesickness?
Keep busy with what you're doing. Annette, and if you get an assignment, do it, and don't just lay around. And Annette, we were never able to lay around much. Annette, we never gotten took a nap in our bunks. Annette, during the day, we were always busy. Annette, doing something, some chore.
What were some scary experiences that you that happened to you while you were aboard it, and maybe with your friends?
Well, we had several Japanese fighter planes that were taking shots at us. Some hit the flight deck and the hangar deck, It was a scary night, but fortunately there was only a few that I can remember. Annette, when I was in my bunk, laying there on that pillow, trying to save us, Father, save us. I want to go home and do, you know, get married, go to school, and all those things. Just please protect us during this evening, Annette. And you can hear all the shells. You know, no matter how far you on where your bunk was, sound traveled. You could hear everything. It was amazing. It was pretty scary. And a lot of these happened at night. I remember when our planes were taken off the flight deck. Sometimes they'd fire them up. These were propeller planes before the jets came aboard. And these propellers were, well, I don't know how the flight deck did it, flight crew, but they would fire up these planes when they were getting ready to go up the elevator to the flight deck. They stored all the aircraft on the hangar deck. Annette, and that was a deck below the flight deck. And they had a few problems. I never saw them, but some boys on the flight deck got hit by the propellers. So it was kind of scary when they had general quarters and they were trying to get these planes ready to go up the elevator. They only had two elevators, and they had to get all those fighter planes from the hangar deck up to the flight deck. And then at that time, most of them were just taken off by themselves. We had catapults, but they didn't have time to hook them up with the planes and that. So they started at aft and went right to the nose, Annette, and took off. They took off against the wind, and most of the time I never saw, all the time I was in there, I never saw any planes go off the back. They landed at the back and went forward. All the planes took off forward, and they would go to the left or to the right when they left the deck.
So what was your job on board the Princeton?
I was in the engine room. We had two big engine rooms on those carriers and four boiler rooms. And I happened to be in the engine room. It's where they assigned me. It was strange that you'd be sitting there looking through a screen and trying to see where you're going, and all these gauges. You learn pretty fast what each one of them was. You're actually, you know, getting enough power in those engines to keep them going. You weren't steering the ship. That's done on the flight, on the hangar deck, flight deck.
So I have another question. When we were asking you about your difficult trials and things, what role did faith play during your time during World War II?
Well, you never lost your faith. You questioned a lot. Why, Father? Why is this happening? But we had, it just carried us to, we knew where we were going. We were eventually going to go back home, and eventually our country was going to win this tragic war we were in, not of our choice, but we didn't have much choice to defend ourselves after Pearl Harbor.
So after your service and everything you learned, how did that prepare you for your future after the war?
How to become a man and not be a little boy anymore, you grew up pretty fast. But I'm not saying that we didn't have tears in our eyes many a times. A lot of times we'd put our head down on that bunk and kind of almost cry ourselves to sleep. I was always asking Father in Heaven to please help us and protect our ships, and want to get home to the mom, dad, and my sisters. I didn't think much of a temple marriage at that particular time, but I knew I wanted to get married, and I wanted to marry a lady, I believe, like I did.
So how did you meet your wife?
We met at Pasadena City College. When I got out of the Navy, I played football for the Navy team and went to Pasadena City College. My folks had moved from Los Angeles to the Burbank, which I didn't even know existed. I didn't know anything about the San Fernando Valley when we moved from Utah down to Los Angeles. So they had moved while I was away in the service. They had moved to the San Fernando Valley to Burbank. I had a friend, a good friend that had played at Pasadena City College, played football, and I guess he didn't talk me into it, but he somehow I ended up going to Pasadena. I went out when I found out they were trying out for the team.
So was it love at first sight when you saw your wife?
We had physiology together. Why I had physiology, I don't know. It was on the schedule, I guess. And we sat at this table in a separate building at Pasadena City College. They had the big building in the back. And we had one of the rooms there for physiology, and they sat at tables. They had tables for, I believe it was six. Yeah, there was six.
Your wife's saying yeah. Four.
Yeah. And
we just happened to sit at the same table. I don't know why.
Ah.
But we sat at the same table. And so over that period, that year, we talked a lot, found out what she was from. San Francisco, her boyfriend had just gone on a mission for the church, and a very handsome man, a very nice looking man. I never met the man, but I ended up going to Pasadena primarily to play football, and I wanted to be a policeman. That was my major, was criminology. And so we both ended up in that class, and we were there all that term. And naturally, we did a lot of talking. And one day I found out that she was a member of the church. And to be honest with you, I can't remember how it came up, but all of a sudden we're both members of the church, and she lived in Temple City, and I, of course, live with my parents in Burbank. That's how we met. We started walking together to her algebra class and my football theory class. We had that after the physiology class, and we would walk together. We walked separately, but after a while, we ended up walking together, never holding hands, never got that far. But
you're holding hands yes. Now, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yes.
So you mentioned that you took criminology, you were planning on being a policeman. What did you end up doing as a career in life?
That's interesting. I met Sue's dad, and he was a plastering contractor, him and his brother, Bill. And K.H. Anderson Plastering, Lathner Plastering. But it was mostly plastering. We didn't do much with the lathing. That was done before. But so I got into the plastering business, and it was hard, very hard. Anybody that's ever worked in that business, most construction is hard, no matter what you do, Annette. But this plastering was very hard to walk on a scaffolding, and several times I started to fall off or step between the planks. And sometimes we did a lot of schools, and the scaffolding was very, very high, Annette. And if you'd have fallen off of there, in a house you can fall off and step down to the floor. But in these big buildings, classroom buildings, auditoriums, you could fall almost to your death. It was a long ways down. Scaffolding was very high. And that you learned a lot of balance, a lot of skill, and yet you still had to perform. You had to get that mud on the wall and the ceiling. And when I first started with Sue's dad, we did everything by hand. And then eventually they had these guns come out.
So we heard a little bit about your love story. So how long have you been married to your beautiful wife?
How many? 72.
You've been married for 72 years. Wow.
No.
Yes, no. I think you have been. No. 72 years you've been married? So during that time, which is longer than our lives put together thus far, what advice would you give couples that are starting out or further in their marriage? What advice would you give couples?
Be truthful. And everything that you do, be truthful, Annette, and always, if you have a problem, you know, talk to your girlfriend or your wife, Annette, and just be truthful, be honest at all times, Annette, and live up to your teachings. Remember what you've learned in all those years in church. You go through a lot of things and when you're in the service, and at any time of potential war, there's a lot of things. The main thing on your mind is staying alive. You know, I want to see tomorrow, Father. Please bless the ship and bless all of us. And I remember when I was young, I said my prayers, and that at times you get carried away with what's going on in the world, and sometimes you, can I skip the night, Father? No. So you say it, and I always said my prayers.
So what does happiness look like to you?
Happiness is meeting the right lady, girl, and being married in the temple for time and all eternity. And that's a wonderful, wonderful feeling. We raised five beautiful children. They were all turned out just beautiful. The church was a big, big part of my life. And at times I pleaded for help. Father, please protect us. Especially when they were strafing our ship with those fighter jets out there, that all this going on at night, and you're laying there in your bunk not knowing if you're gonna be there tomorrow.
Grandpa, can you tell us more about your experience in Guam?
We flew to Guam, Annette, and that's where we got on board our ship, Annette. But it was a while, so we were on Guam for several days, Annette, and sleeping in Quonset huts. And they would have the refrigerators, which in the service they call them reefers, and they would have all the food in it. the Japanese, we'd have to protect that. We had a guard standing around the reefers just to keep the Japanese, not the prisoners, they were hiding in the island. And they would come down and they'd raid the reefers and take as much food as they could. And I'm sure we had groups that kind of scouted around the island at times. And that, I don't know what branch that would be, but every now and then you'd hear a gunshot at night when you were we slept in Quonset huts. Guam wasn't a very big island, but there's still Japanese. The enemy was hiding in caves, and they would come down and try to steal the food. And I remember they one time they had a floodlight or some kind of a big light, and they shined it on this area and you could see them. And they would grab them, and most of them hardly had any clothes on, worn out of their clothes, I guess. And they would try and steal from the reefers and survive on that what food they could get. And it's amazing. It's kind of scary to think that you could be sleeping with the enemy. Almost seemed like they were so close. But that's how a lot of the Japanese survived on these islands, and then eventually they just gave up or were caught. Well, we wake up in the morning and that was... So you grow up in a hurry. You go into the service as a young boy or girl, and you grow up very fast. You come out a man and a woman with a lot of knowledge and a lot of thankfulness in your heart that you made it through that terrible, terrible. And I just pray in my heart that none of our children will have to go to war.
So it sounds like a lot of your happiness has come from your children, your wife, and just from the church and the gospel in Jesus Christ. What were some proud decisions you made in your life?
At the time, it sounded great, but it was very scary. Scary part of my life. I'd like to forget the whole thing and like it never happened. And just remember going to school, meeting my wonderful wife, Annette. And here she had moved from San Francisco down, and she had sent her boyfriend, her fiance, on a mission. So he went on a mission, and my mission was to be there at Pasadena City College with my future wife. So I kind of come out ahead there, I think.
I think so. I think it was divine design.
Yeah.
So looking back in the few short years you've been on this earth, what is something that you would like to tell your future generations, your kids and their kids and their grandkids? If you could give some sort of advice, what would it be?
Well, I pray for peace and that respect. Just learn to respect your fellow man or lady. What the world needs is more peace and more honesty, more love. Well, I try to be honest and truthful at all times. And show love, be care for your fellow man or woman. No hatred, no more hatred in the world. Love and peace.
Love
you. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Alrighty.
Well, Grandpa, we're grateful that you survived the war and that we're able to be with you today to talk about your experiences and how you've been able to come out as a better person and be able to help your children be happy in their lives. So we're grateful that we're able to have this conversation and be able to just talk a little about who you are and how we can all be able to learn from you.
Well, thank you.
That's everything.
If you enjoy watching podcasts like this, please like and subscribe.
And if you have any ideas about what kind of questions you'd like to see us ask in the next interview, please comment below.
Otherwise, thank you for watching, and we'll see you on our next episode. This is Tell Us More. Catch you later.